Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are breezing through a Monday morning, December 9th. The text comes across from Nola Reddy. Heavy rain could cause street flooding, neutral ground parking allowed through 8 a.m. December 10th, which would be tomorrow. Be careful of debris on neutral ground, etc. So, neutral ground parking approved through 8 a.m. tomorrow with the usual considerations of don't block intersections, streetcar tracks, and all that kind of stuff. We're going to talk about electric vehicles this hour. Steven Melnick's our friend, our guest, professor of supply chain management at Michigan State, where he's done research in the strategic supply chain, cybersecurity, performance measurements, and supply chain design. He is our EV go-to guy. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning. Very well. Thank you. And yourself?
Well, fine. Thank you for taking the time with us. What's it like in Michigan? I'm just curious today.
There's an old saying in Michigan that says, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes and it'll change. About 3 or 4 days ago, we had snow that required me to bring out my snowblower. Mm. And on Sunday, most of that disappeared and we were in the 60s.
No kidding.
So
really?
It's been interesting. It's been up and down.
Wow. And what about today?
Today's going to be a nice day. It's going to be on the cool side, but it's going to be a busy day for me. So I think it should be in around the 40s. It's basically we're getting into winter.
Yeah, I just picture Michigan being, it's all always like the Ohio State game, right? You always picture cold, gray Ann Arbor skies, but not always. Let's talk about EVs.
We don't talk about Ann Arbor, but that's the evil empire to anyone from Michigan State.
Okay, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have brought it up. Let's talk about, I'm looking at a Yahoo argument, a Yahoo story here, yahoo.com. Representative from Ohio saying that Pete Buttigieg will leave his transportation secretary job, having spent $7.5 billion to build 8 EV charging stations. And then Donald Trump Jr. sharing the post, adding, doesn't seem like a great return on investment. But the politics of this is interesting because Elon Musk, who builds Teslas, is a big Donald Trump supporter. So I guess you got the politics of this, you got the economics of this, you got the science of this. For people that don't know about EVs, let's take a step back, Professor, and explain, before you go shopping for an electric vehicle, some of the things you need to be aware of.
Okay, first of all, EVs are a very different technology in contrast to the internal combustion or ICE vehicle. What you've got is you've got typically 4 motors, each one driving a wheel. They are heavier with the current technology, they're heavier than a comparable internal combustion car. That's because of the battery pack. You also have a battery pack, which is itself in many cars the biggest limitation. It gives you your range. It's affected by factors such as the cold. I was talking to my next-door neighbor who works for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, and he has an EV truck that he uses as his business, and he was up in Ludington, and he made the observation that it went to around freezing, and suddenly he lost about 30% of his power. That is to say, if your range was, let's say, 400 miles, multiply that by 0.7, and that gives you your effective range. And if you add in factors such as, putting on the heater, et cetera, it basically means that you're dealing with around 250 to 280 miles range. And on top of that, you've got to deal with the fact that when you go out and charge your vehicle, charging becomes an issue. And you've got two issues there. You've got, have you got access to the right charging port? And can you get access to a fast charger? And is there availability of chargers? And that was really, when they were taught, when the Trump administration was talking about the costs, what they were really getting to is the fact that the Department of Transportation, which is going to be currently, according to my information, Sean Duffy looks like he's going to be the nominee for the to head up the Department of Transportation. They had money which they were investing in terms of basically, as pointed out, $7.5 billion program to develop an EV charging infrastructure. And that's not just simply charging stations, that's having the system in place, availability, et cetera. There's also, if you look at what's happening, there's also money that's been invested or available for investing. For example, the Department of Energy has money that they're going to be used, that they could use for loan guarantees to battery makers and materials miners. They have a $2 billion program to convert old factories to EVs. They also have $6 billion in grant for companies that build battery components and recycle end-of-life batteries, which is a major issue. The battery itself in operation is very efficient. The problem that you have is building the battery, and then once the battery reaches its end of its life, you've got to get rid of the battery. And that's not just simply, like, take a look about the problem we've had getting rid of tires. You've got similar problems in getting rid of batteries, which means you have unique materials. You just can't simply dump them into a landfill and hope it's not going to do any damage. You've got all of these. Go on.
No. I can't tell when you stop. I want to hear you. That's why you're here. Go ahead, please.
Okay. No. And so what I'm trying to say is, when you hear Trump saying this, understand that what he's talking about is really multiple issues. So what you've got is you've got industry, which is looking at converting to EVs as a way of dealing with energy shortages. And on the other hand, you've got Trump talking about the fact that he wants to do things, not only get rid of the charging infrastructure issue, but also get rid of the $7,500 EV tax credit, which is what Elon Musk is really excited about.
About getting rid of the tax credit? You mean sarcastic?
Yes. No, seriously.
Why?
Okay, understand what's happened. Elon Musk is the leader. Mm-hmm. Today I was kind of, as I was getting ready for this discussion, I was looking through with one of the Bloomberg Business, their online presence. They had a really interesting article about Volkswagen and their current struggles that they have in this period of time. Most traditional ICE companies, internal combustion companies like General Motors, companies like Ford, Volkswagen, BMW, Mercedes, compared to Tesla, they're behind, they're really lagging. When you build an EV, you've got several things that you have to manage. You've got to do the vehicle, the battery, and the information system. And if you look at Tesla, they're ahead of the curve there. So in essence, what's happening is the $7,500 tax credit that currently was instituted by Biden under the Inflation Recovery Act, I think that's the name of it, the Recovery Act that was designed to help the economy get back after the pandemic. What Tesla sees this as, this is hurting the competition. They're behind the gap. They're behind Tesla.
What's helping the competition and hurting them, right?
Right. It's basically hurting the competition, helping Tesla. Because before, that enabled people to consider buying cars that lowered the price of cars, for example, from GM. And now what's happening is you're taking away that. Tesla has an inherent competitive advantage.
Let me use a timeout, Professor, because I'm getting confused. So you got a $7,500 tax credit for an EV, correct?
Yep.
That applies to Teslas as well?
Yep.
Okay.
But here's the point.
Yeah.
If you take it, the competition has been using this to help increase demand for their products. Mm-hmm. Tesla has an inherent advantage. because they've been dealing with all three factors for a period of time. And so consequently, what's happening is what Tesla's seeing is what Elon Musk is seeing is that if this is taken away, it takes away a form of support for the competition. Mm-hmm. So given this, it's, as one person put it, I'm going to quote something which I found was interesting. There's a guy by the name of Mike Murphy, who's a longtime Republican strategist who runs the EV Politics Project. And he described Tesla's support for the removal of this tax credit as, quote, Tesla first, everyone second policy. Because so, if you take away the sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
If you take away the support from the other companies, you're helping them. And Tesla has been cutting prices. It's been very aggressive in the market. It's got the advantage. You see companies like General Motors, Ford. General Motors, of all the companies I looked at, has been basically making the best progress. You've got companies like Stellantis struggling. You've got companies like Toyota struggling. Toyota doesn't know if they're going to be doing EVs or hydrogen. So what this is doing, this has been a support for them, not only for those companies, but consider it something else. How about the other companies in the market? Companies like the Lucid Group, Arrival, Fisker, which is now filed for bankruptcy, Rivian Auto, Polestar Automotive, Northvolt, which is a Swedish-based battery maker. These companies have been helped by this credit because it makes their product more affordable.
So Elon Musk is saying, in essence, I don't care if people have to, in essence, pay $7,500 more for my vehicle, my product, my Tesla. They're going to buy it anyway. Do away with the tax credit, and then that'll really shut off the competition. Is that an accurate statement?
Well, it's not so much that it's going to be like you've been helping everyone. Take it away from them. They're going to be struggling because they have to make up that cost. I'm in a better position to compete because I've already made the investments.
Even though the end result would be people are going to wind up paying $7,500 more if they buy a Tesla,
yep,
because the credit goes away, correct?
That's right. And that presents a few problems because the first thing is many of the car companies and the EVs are really not financially stable. If you look at a recent report that's been done, I'll just give you some statistics. In a recent report, they found out that of the 54 publicly traded EV and battery startups, 7 companies have already filed for bankruptcies, 13 are projected to run out of cash by summer 2025, and some 27 are losing money. Mm. So if you think of it, you take away the support of this. What this does is it reduces the price of their product. Mm-hmm. And now the product goes up, it becomes more expensive. Elon Musk has been basically cutting prices. He's aggressive. He's going to cut prices to put him into a difficult position. And so what's going to happen is you're going to see EV companies on the margin fall away. And I don't know what's going to happen. And on top of that, that doesn't address the challenge that we have that China's sitting there. And China is a formidable competitor when it comes to EVs.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back, Professor. We'll digest what we heard so far. Got a lot of questions pouring in. And, just a lot of questions. I guess I don't even want to pose any now because I don't want to get ahead of myself. 922, we're talking to Stephen Melnick, Professor of Supply Chain Management at Michigan State, where he's done research in strategic supply chains, cybersecurity performance, measurement, supply chain design. As Jordan said, he is our EV MVP. So, Professor, basically, Elon Musk, if this $7,500 credit goes away, if I'm understanding what you just said, is he could take less profit until everybody else was out of business and he'd almost own the market himself. Accurate?
I don't know if he would own the market. I'm just going to simply say the following. It puts the other companies into a disadvantage. It disadvantages them. I'll give you one final thing before you take a break. Consider the following. Rivian and Lucid, which are two of the more stable companies, mm-hmm, since the election of Trump, have seen their stock prices fall by about 50%.
Wow.
So think about it. You know, what you have is you have a company which is an industry leader, And he looks at this and he says, it's artificial support for everyone else. Let's go to a more even playing ground. I'm willing to take the price cuts because I've invested.
Let me take a break, and I think we could come back with this question in the text line, which is a good one to put it all in context. And it says simply, did the government ever build gas stations to go back and see what the evolution of the internal combustion engine and how we got to going with using cars in the United States and now the transfer to electric vehicles? Back in a flash, WWL. 9:30, talking to our EV MVP, Stephen Melnick, professor of supply chain management at Michigan State. Professor, a text came in, I think it's a good one, about did the government ever pay, did they ever pay to build gas stations, I guess is what the question was saying, going to the development of the ICE and vehicles and roadways, et cetera. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, you're right, they didn't, but... You've got to take that off. Okay, bit of a history statement. You've got to take that statement with a grain of salt because it was not until the 1930s that the government got into the business of retirement with Social Security. So that was something that was not even considered in the time period of Henry Ford. When Henry Ford was looking at the Model T car, he realized that as he was cutting the price because of his improvements in production. Like for example, you can have the car in any color you want as long as it's black. That was one aspect, but had to give the people the ability to use it because he was not only in competition with other gas car builders, he was in competition with companies that were rebuilding cars driven by steam, cars driven by electricity. So he had to make his product easy, accessible to more people. So what did he do? He worked with Standard Oil. And he got Standard Oil to invest in gas stations because it was their capability. He also worked with Rand McNally. Why Rand McNally? Because prior to Rand McNally, you didn't think about traveling long distances between cities. Like, for example, me getting in the car and going to Detroit, or me getting in the car and going to Chicago, or you getting in the car and going from New Orleans to Baton Rouge. You basically took the train or else you didn't do it. And when you had roads which were unknown, you needed a method that could help people get from point A to point B. How did you do it? Rand McNally came in with the Atlas. Right now we have the descendants of it when you're working with your GPS app and it talks about state of construction. Now we have a situation where the government and economics has recognized that there are certain activities which are, quote, cloaked with public good. For example, military defense. And those type of goods are things that should be done by the government. And in this case, the problem that you have with the EV structure is that you need to have a structure of EV filling charging stations, which is comparable to gas charging stations, which is accessible to people. And this is accessible not simply to only Teslas, it's accessible to anyone. And that's a major undertaking. And so what's happening is people now recognize that investing in fueling infrastructure because it benefits multiple companies and multiple people, this is an appropriate area in which government gets involved. I mean, we shouldn't get involved with certain areas which are better done by the private sector. But since this is something like road maintenance, I mean, can you imagine what would happen if the government didn't pay for road maintenance?
So let me ask you this, Professor.
Sure.
Take me through an example of how the development of the EV industry would mirror that of... because you don't need navigation aids anymore. That's already there. Nope. You don't need what was the other one you said about?
You need what you need. When I gave you the example, you asked the question. How did we develop the fillings? Service stations.
So I guess how would it organically develop without government support, or could it? Well, the EV industry.
Yeah. Well. Okay, I don't know about back then with Henry Ford. It developed because Henry Ford went to the people in Standard Oil and said he needed this, and this was an opportunity for both companies. In today's environment, what you need, okay, let's go on. If we think that EVs are part of the solution, I'm of the opinion right from the get-go that we will never get to a pure 100% EV solution. I think it's going to be some form of hybrid, a mixture. In order to make EVs attractive, because right now they've hit the chasm, what you have to do is lower the price of the vehicle, increase the availability of charging stations, and reduce charging time. The challenge that you have is all three areas have got to be dealt with. You take away the $7,500 price tax credit, that's not attacking number one. Then you have the two issues. How do we then get charging stations, which are as numerous as you have gas stations? Because one of the problems people are going to have is range, you know, I forget the exact term, it's range concern. That is, they're going to worry about the fact that they will not have enough electric power to get them to the next charging station. That's going to be a major issue. Right now, the only company that I see capable of doing that is Tesla. But I don't think Tesla understands or is, how can I put it? Tesla is profit-driven. This is something which helps multiple people. I don't see them as putting the same degree of emphasis on it. To give you an example, when there was some time ago when demand dropped, Tesla got rid of his fast charging people. If Tesla thinks that this is important, he would have kept them. So what I'm concerned about is if you want EVs to be more than town cars, if you want EVs to be bought by people who view it as their single car, not as one of three cars, then you've got to deal with the issue of having range, adequate charging stations, fast charging time. Fast charging time is being looked at in technology. Having charging stations is an infrastructure issue. And I don't see anyone in the private sector doing it without having duplication, without having, you're going to have consolidation, without having, it's going to be a problem for me.
Let me take a break, Professor, and I will pick it up here when we come back. All right, Elon Musk, the $7,500 credit goes away. You want the EV market, you got it. Now what do you do with it? We'll talk about that when we come back. Stephen Melnick, our guest, professor of supply chain management at Michigan State. Unless you're just selling people modified golf carts, I don't understand. We'll talk when we come back. Right now, traffic, WWL. All right, that's enough. Let's go back to Stephen Melnick, professor of supply chain management at Michigan State. Professor, so let's talk about Elon Musk and the EV market. Okay, Elon, $7,500 credit goes away. You got it. What happens now?
Well, the problem that you have is that when that goes away, we've got the other issues. Right now, the most visible aspect is the $7,500, and that's the one thing Trump has talked about. But I want you to take a look at some of the things. First of all, you asked a question regarding what differentiated Elon Musk from his competition. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to give you something to think about. Number one, Elon Musk is a very vertically integrated company. They build their own batteries. They develop their own software. They assemble their own cars. If you look at GM and Ford, they're different. They assemble. That's their model, which means if you take the $7,500, it not only affects GM and Ford, it also affects the suppliers of batteries, which is important. Mm-hmm. It affects, to give you an example, these battery suppliers themselves are on very shaky ground. A good example, Northvolt, which is a Swedish-based battery company, just filed for bankruptcy after BMW canceled a key order.
Wait, let me jump in for one second. Is Elon Musk involved in battery production at all?
Yes, he is. He's a vertically integrated company.
Okay, gotcha. Go ahead.
So anyway, what's really happening is this thing is not only affecting, and then on top of that, what I'm really interested is Trump has nominated two people, Chris White and Sean Duffy. They're nominees. Chris White's going to manage. He's been proposed as the head of the Department of Energy. Sean Duffy's been proposed as the head of the Department of Transportation. Both departments are critical to EVs. And the other issue that's going to make things interesting is we've got to deal with politics. And that's something that Elon Musk, that's separate from Elon Musk. And what I mean by politics is Georgia just announced a major battery plant. If I'm Trump, I don't want to upset Georgia. They're one of my strongest supporters. And take a look at how important, you know, these two departments are to the future of EVs. Wright would oversee loan programs in the Department of Energy, $6 million in loan guarantees to battery makers, material miners. And that's something that Elon Musk is also going to be concerned about, because little thing to think about, Trump has talked about putting tariffs on China, and China has responded saying, okay, fine, you won't get batteries, you won't get the minerals you need to make batteries, or that dynamics.
So let me jump in for that with that for a second, because I'm getting a lot of text on that. In terms of energy dependency, how dependent is the United States going to make itself on countries like China and others for the materials needed to make batteries for the EVs, as opposed to oil and the things needed to produce gasoline?
Well, here's the point. If you looked at the inducements offered by the Department of Energy, the Department of Transportation, in terms of battery, you know, loan guarantees, conversions, grants for companies that will build components, if you look at the DOT, which provides a $7.5 billion program, what you're doing is, if you take that away, we're going to turn and look at getting supplies. A lot of our materials come from China. That's the fact of the matter. So what you have to think about is, if you take away the grants, if you take them away, how are we going to build batteries? How are we going to have the materials to build batteries? We're going to have to rely on technology. But to do that, you've got to have inducements. And so this is a complex area, and then if you add in politics, several of the red states have announced battery plants. Do you want to compromise those? So what I'm saying is, you've got the $7,500. Elon Musk is totally in favor of that. But then it doesn't – it helps him in one way. On the other hand, we've got issues involving raw materials. We need to develop a source of material that's not China-dependent, and that's going to take time and money. We're going to need to have a supply chain. Elon Musk has got his own supply chain, which means we're going to be building based on what he has, which is we're limited by one company. If we want to have a broader usage of EVs, we're going to have more. We need more competition. And then that. So you've got the fact we're dependent on China. And then on the other hand, I'm going to throw you another wrench. The Chinese cars are coming into the market. Something for you to think about. Just, you know, with me, a straight line is a curve. There's a guy on the YouTube called Doug DeMuro, and he does reviews of cars. He was invited out by three Chinese companies stationed in L.A. to review their cars. One of the car companies that he was invited has a great, great name, one that everyone in your audience should recognize, Triumph. Mm-hmm. Think about the legacy of Triumph. And he drove them, and he was surprised. He said the price was significantly cheaper, they were high quality, and they drove well. That, to me, is the bigger issue, which is, in the short term, Tesla wins. In the long term, my concern is China wants to get into our market. China sees the United States as a large market. We're having difficulty getting into the Chinese market. They want to get into our market, and they're going to do it the way they've done it in other industries. What China does is it goes from the bottom up. That is, it comes in at the bottom with the low price stuff that nobody wants to touch, and it then grabs market share. And the auto industry is letting China, in essence, preparing China to do that. There was a recent report that talked about GM. GM reported profits going up, but yet they sold fewer items. And how did they do that? they were charging more for each item. And yet there was another report that came out saying that there is an enormous pent-up demand from customers, consumers, for well-built cars between $20,000 to $25,000. And if you look at the price of the Chinese, even with the tariffs, guess what? They're in that sweet spot. So what you have going on here is my concern with the Trump initiative is it affects one thing, but it also affects a lot of other things. And ultimately, our goal is we should be to build low-cost, reliable cars which are well-supported, which can be charged, which can be driven for longer distances by American car companies.
Now, and real quick, before I let you go, I know the Biden administration put that 100% tariff, I think it was, on the Japanese,
Chinese.
If that were to go away, and I'm not saying it is, I'm just saying hypothetically, and the Chinese were to flood the market with their $10,000 EVs, that would collapse the charging system in the country, would it not?
Yes, it would. And therefore, you have a problem. You have the fact that but then here's the situation. It's going to create, in essence, without a charging station, and if people use the charging ports in their own home, they're going to create a system where the EV becomes essentially a town car. Mm-hmm. It's a car that you use to run around town. And that's fine, but I think if we are to get the benefits, and by the way, just to let you know, since there was a report that just came out from the EPA that pointed out that, guess what? The shift of American consumers, as small as it is, to EVs, has had a significant impact on emissions. Wow. So if we're going to have that impact, it's not enough. We've got to have a three-peater. We've got to have low-priced cars, availability of low-cost charging, fast, combined with a supply chain that can support competitors in the market.
A hat trick.
You need competition because, I hate to say this, competition drives innovation.
It does.
And when you're in the market like EVs, you need competition.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time as always. Stephen Melnick, Professor of Supply Chain Management at Michigan State. You can download the Odyssey app, use the Rewind feature, or just go to WWL.com, click on my name. You'll find this audio posted soon if you want to go back and re-listen. Back in a flash, WWL.